Hello and welcome to Living Money's Manifesto for Monday the 2nd of February 2015. I'm Jeremy Dees, financial life planner with over 25 years experience in financial services, author of Right Money, Right Place, Right Time and founder of Living Money. And as usual on the first Monday of the month, rather a chilly February morning this Monday, it's time to take a look at global economies and markets, which are probably just about as chilly as well. Well, that's not strictly true. Anyway, January, it's usually a very interesting month. Investors either come back from holiday with a new perspective and a firm trend, either negative or positive, develops, or else, as in this case, they come back more uncertain than ever. And although in January most markets rose, the European market strongly, the US fell back, an interesting dynamic in its own right. And the month's numbers hide ongoing volatility. And we also saw significant central bank activity in January. Some are expected, some of it not. And this tells its own story in many ways. So the Fed left its policy unchanged, citing a US economy expanding at a solid pace with strong employment gains and indicating no change until mid-2015 at the earliest. The Bank of Japan admitted its 2% inflation goals would not be reached by April 15 and consequently extended its bond buying programme. The ECB met and came up with the QE goods at last in an attempt to revitalise the economy, fend off deflation and increase employment. The Bank of Canada surprised with a 25 basis point cut in its interest rate, and it had been expected to start increasing rates this year, citing the economic contraction due to a declining oil price. Both Singapore and Russia met unexpectedly and introduced policy changes, Russia loosening, Singapore concentrating on trying to reduce its currency's appreciation against the dollar to offset a further decline in inflation expectations. A quick economics lesson 101 here. If currency falls, imports gain in price, adding to inflation. And this, by the way, is also a side effect of European quantitative easing, which has pushed the euro down to a seven-year low, and the higher cost of imports will, it's hoped, put upward pressure on inflation. So here are the highlights from the regions in January. Across in the States, the Fed, as I've already said, maintains a steady hand at the tiller, seeing no need to change course for a few months yet. And although the Fed sees a steady growing economy, it's not all rosy. 4Q GDP figures disappointed at just 2.6% against estimates of 3.2%. Manufacturing surprisingly fell back, and arguably the economy in some parts of the US is softer than most people think. However, the consumer sector, the key driver of the US economy, is growing more positive. Exports are up, but unfortunately so are imports. Federal government expenditure is down, however, and whilst this has a short-term impact on US growth overall, it does reflect the ongoing shift from government-supported economy to corporate support. Having said that, corporate results were mixed. Away from Apple's outstanding 4Q results on the back of its iPhone 6 and cheering news from McDonald's and Boeing, results from the likes of Microsoft, Caterpillar and Procter & Gamble were actually really quite disappointed. Let's head across the Atlantic, and Europe and Greece in particular were the main focus of investors' attention in January. The month started off badly with reports of falling industrial output in November and falling inflation verging on deflation. Now, whether or not the ECB wanted to wait until February after the Greece elections to introduce quantitative easing to Europe, these figures and the momentum building from commentators for a January start left the ECB with little option. And the move, with figures in excess of what the markets had expected, generally pleased investors, leading to strong rises in European markets. However, Greece is, of course, a major cause for concern. The concern is less about whether Greece will stay in the euro or not, more about short-term liquidity and whether Greek banks can weather impending liquidity challenges. And the new Greek government obviously does not play the game the same way as conventional Europe, and its inexperience may actually be the greatest threat to European stability. Across in the Far East, Japan's positive month on the market stemmed from strong corporate results, which offset some rather mixed economic data. And China seems like to sanction a continuing steady decline in growth to levels more appropriate to and sustainable for a developed economy. And its focus now seems to be on structural changes to prevent excessive debt and inappropriate financial transactions through greater regulatory scrutiny. Once again, that cannot be a bad thing. Looking at some of the other indicators in January, oil continues to fall, standing at the end of the month at $44.50 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate. Currencies remain volatile. The US dollar continued to strengthen against the yen and the euro, then fell back towards the end of the month a little as initial 4Q GDP figures came in weaker than expected. The pound is now at its strongest against euro for 7 years on the back of euro quantitative easing. And the commodity currencies of Australia and Canada continue to slide as commodities, especially oil and iron ore, continue to fall. So let's have a look at what markets did in January. They were, as I say, mainly positive except for the US. Japan was up 1%, the Far East up 2.5%, Europe was up 7.5%, UK is up 1.5%, the US was down 3%, oil was down 15% to $44.5 a barrel, gold was up 4.5% at $1,279 an ounce, reflecting probably greater uncertainty. So what's the bottom line? Well, in its latest and somewhat uninspiring report, the IMF lowered its global growth forecast to 3.5% in 2015 and 3.7% in 2016. And the IMF sees most of that growth coming from the US, offsetting ongoing weakness in Europe. And many oil-producing countries will suffer as oil falls further, with those such as Russia, Nigeria and Venezuela already in difficulties, suffering the worst. An interesting phrase that the IMF uses is lingering legacies of the crisis. And as I have said before, it takes many years to recover from balance sheet crises, and these legacies could well linger on right through until the end of the decade. However, I see the IMF's forecast as a positive. Global growth of 3.5% to 4% at a point 7 years after the start of the crisis is probably about on target. And although we face an interesting portfolio of financial, political, social and natural risks at the moment, I see the potential for a supportive and steadily growing economy, reducing unemployment and social stability in the longer term, although admittedly there could be continuing volatility and low numbers in the short term. And in financial planning terms, therefore, it remains important to have the correct asset allocation to ensure the right money is in the right place at the right time and have a balanced multi-asset class portfolio protected against the macroeconomic risks. Before I go, a quick bit about Living Money. Living Money coaches busy families in personal finance. At its heart is Future, a six-step program that brings relief from sleepless nights worrying about money and secures the lifestyle you want as quickly and as efficiently as possible as the crow flies. I'm known by my advised clients as a planner who puts life back into money, and my mission is to leave my clients feeling liberated. We're not authorized to provide financial advice. We do not recommend financial products. Instead, we aim to provide you with the tools and skills to buy the financial products that will best serve your life and money. So start by joining the Living Money community. Go to our website and become a fledgling member and get access to a range of resources to help you plan your life and money. Well, that's it for me. Thank you for listening. Have a very, very good week. Take care and go well.